The point I was wanting to make, just going through this, the book of Ezekiel, maybe encourage everybody to read the book. It's a book that has a lot of prophecy, and it's stuff that, if you just know a general history of the Bible, see, most people don't know, they're not concerned with that at all, of having the story flow of the Bible from the creation of man until the return of Jesus Christ. And that's what the Bible is. It's a story flow. And once we get that story flow, we can make some good applications. Okay, today we're going to talk about the book of Ezekiel a little, and we're just going to look at a little overview of it, because the book of Ezekiel is a very unique book. Every book in the Bible is unique in that sense, but Ezekiel is pretty well a mystery book because it was written to Ezekiel. Ezekiel, I think, was a priest, and he was like Daniel. He was taken captive by the Babylonians, and he's different from Daniel in the sense that Daniel wound up in Nebuchadnezzar's cabinet, actually running the nation. Ezekiel was in a prison, in a captive, and as far as we know, he stayed there. God gave him a whole lot more detailed information than nearly any other prophet in the Bible. You could sort of equate maybe Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Jeremiah a little about as far as the prophetic information that God used them to relay. Ezekiel's message was to the house of Israel. If we'll look over in the third chapter, "Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, eat what you find, eat the scroll, and go and speak to the house of Israel." So this was like in the book of Revelation with John, where John wrote down this little scroll, and then he ate it. And if you remember the book of Revelation, God says it wasn't to be revealed at that time. This is the same sort of thing. Chapter 2 talks about the rebellious house of Israel. And let's clarify a little bit about the house of Israel. Well, let's go back and look at when Jacob blessed his sons. We're not going to turn back to Genesis to look at that, but he took Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and said, "Let my name be on them." Biblically, when we're looking at the scriptures, the word Israel in the Bible, and particularly in prophecy, has multi meanings. Sometimes it refers to Jacob the man, or Israel the man. And the word Israel, Jacob's name was changed to Israel because he prevailed with God. And the nation of Israel is to eventually prevail with God, but they haven't yet. And Jacob put his name on Ephraim and Manasseh. So that tells us a lot. And then if we look to the time of the divided kingdom from Jeroboam and Rehoboam, where Jeroboam kept the Jews, the Benjaminites, most of the Levites, and probably the Simeonites. Because that's one thing Jacob said. And we can identify nationalities today that are from all those tribes, except you can't find a tribe of Levi, nor can you find a tribe of Simeon. You can't identify them because God told Jacob to say, "Be thou not united." You're not going to have your own clan, your own countries. You're going to, and with the Levites, they're to be scattered in Israel. That was always their job. They had no territory in Israel except Levitical cities close to where they had to work. That's all. And that's just a little Bible history that if you don't understand it, you're not going to understand the Bible. People look at the Bible and pull out their favorite little verse and get lovey-dovey and don't pay any attention to what it really says. They don't pay any attention to God at all. Now, this message, this scroll, if we go on down to verse 3, we say, see, it was just like the scroll that John got in, what is it, Revelation 10, I believe somewhere. It's sweet in his mouth, but bitter in his belly. It tastes good when you eat it, and that's disobedience to God can taste good when you're doing it. But it sours on your stomach.
Yeah.
And so at the beginning of the book of Ezekiel, we can see that it's a book that hasn't been delivered. Now, I don't know exactly when the manuscripts of Ezekiel's writings became available to ancient Israel, but it had to be long after the Babylonian captivity because it was written during the Babylonian captivity. And guess what? For the Babylonian captivity, the nation of Israel, the 10 tribes, had been deported and moved. And they were not even going to have this book available to them where they could sit down and read it until the time of the Reformation and basically, we can just say the time of the English or German Bible, because that's the first two languages that the scriptures were translated into. Martin Luther did the New Testament and then later the Old Testament, but there was Tyndale and Wycliffe and then Pilgrim's Bible, and then finally the King James that was widely circulated and became. So Israel, the average Manassite or Ephraimite or from any other tribe, never had a chance to see this book till a few hundred years ago. And nobody ever thinks about that. Now, I want to look at over about the 8th chapter. In the first verse, he was sitting in my house. And even though Ezekiel was a captive, he had his own quarters, apparently. He was a captive like Paul was when he was in Rome, that Paul had his own place to live. He was under house arrest. And he was sitting in his house with some of the elders of Judah. And he begins to prophesy here to talk to Judah. And I want to go over, we don't have time to read through every word, but in verse 11 of chapter 8, and there stood before them 70 men of the elders of the house of Israel, and each man a censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. And so all this is telling us they were rulers of Israel. They were on the job. And he said to me, I'm in verse 12, Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the room of his idol, for they say, the Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land. And he said to me, turn again and you will see greater abominations. But God does things in type. There's not a, like Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. Men make the same old mistakes time after time. And so he sees these men, and I guess we better go back up and read verse 12. Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in his room of his idols, for they say, and the Lord does not see us, the Lord has forsaken the land. Then God, probably through an angel, says to him, turn again and you will see greater abominations than then. He's looking at the elders, the physical, the governmental structure of Israel, even though Israel's in captivity. And at this time, this would be talking about the Jewish elders, but the Jewish elders that were in Babylon, not the ones that were still back in Jerusalem, depending on when this was written. Because Ezekiel and Daniel were apparently some of the first captives taken, because they took the captives in waves. They came, got the best people first. It was like Mao Zedong's purge in China or Stalin's purge. He would get the best qualified men, and you know, nobody pays any attention to the United States, but in the last 3 or 4 years, the United States has purged the military of its top, yeah, most qualified general. And so you get the top people and leave the used up grounds of the coffee in the pot. And he's told that there's greater things going on, and let's look in verse 14. And so he brought me to the door of the north gate of the Lord's house, and to my dismay, women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz.
Lent.
Keeping a nice Easter service.
Lent is 40 days of weeping for Tammuz.
Yeah,
you know?
Lent.
Well, I didn't know that.
And then he said to me, "Have you seen this, O son of man?" And so, see, here's the pattern that Ezekiel is telling us. A corruption in your government, a corruption in your religion. But no, not mine. We know the Lord. Verse 15. Then he said to me, "Have you seen this? O son of man, turn again, you will see greater abominations than this." And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and there in the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs towards the temple and their faces towards the east, and they were worshiping the sun towards the east. Well, who are these 25 men? Anything of importance? If you understand the structure of the priesthood, you remember last week or week before last, I've forgotten exactly, we talked about the Levitical priesthood and the Aaron's descendants, and they were Aaron's descendants. Were assigned, if you were in that high priest family, you were assigned a specific course in functioning in the temple. And where we see the most of that in what we call more modern times is John the Baptist's dad.
Yeah.
Was fulfilling his course in the temple. And John the Baptist's dad was of Eleazar's line. But the other son, Ithamar's son, would have his sons in some of the courses, but his descendants. But not the... the high priest was always... after Abiathar, David's time and Solomon's time, always from Eleazar's, in Eleazar's line. And David's the one that set this up, David and Solomon. Solomon completed it. There were 24 courses of the priest. And their course would run certain months of the year. They had fulfilled their obligation for that period of time. Again, John the Baptist's dad, he was finished his term up. And so there were 24 of those courses, and then there was the high priest that was there all the time. So there were 24 men, there were 24 and one, which made 25. This is the leadership in the temple. Then he said to me, "Have you seen this, O son of man?" Is it a trivial thing to the house of Judah to commit the abominations which they can't commit here? This is going right on, right in the temple. Interesting thing to think about here is that depending on when Ezekiel wrote this, and that we don't know exactly. We could get Usher's chronology, but that still doesn't tell us when in the period of time that Ezekiel was in captivity in Babylon until the Babylonic captivity was over, or Ezekiel died, whichever came first, when this was written. But chances are Solomon's temple had already been destroyed. Most likely. I'm breaking in the middle of verse 17. For they have filled the land with violence. Then they have returned to provoke me to anger. And then they put the branch to their nose.
Church.
Yep.
What?
Wait, what?
Giving God the finger.
Those church steeples are the finger.
Oh, yeah.
That's nice.
I knew that.
It's
a
nice, neat.
With the branch I didn't get.
Nice King James watering down.
In the Bible, it'll say we couldn't put what it really said because it's very provocative.
It's politically incorrect.
Yeah. So they just put it in a way nobody knew what it meant.
Therefore, I also will act in fury. My eye will not spare, nor will I have pity. Through they cry in my ears with a loud voice, I will not hear them. Now, I'm going to read the ninth verse, the ninth chapter now. And I've talked about this several months ago, and I've talked about it many times, but this is an interesting scripture. Chapter 9, verse 1. Then he called out in my hearing with a loud voice, saying, let those who have charge over the city draw near, each with a deadly weapon in his hand. And suddenly six men came from the direction of the upper gate, which faces the north, each with a battle axe in his hand. And one man among them was clothed in linen and had a writer's inkhorn by his side. And they went out and stood beside the bronze altar. And the glory of the God of Israel had gone up from the cherub where it had been in the threshold of the temple. In fact, this basically said God left the temple. In 70 AD, according to Josephus, said the priests heard a voice and the temple said, let us remove hence. And they listened and fled. And he called to the man clothed with linen, priest, who had a writer's inkhorn by his side, and the Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the forehead of the men who sigh and cry over the abominations that were done within it. And to the others he said, in my hearing, go after him through the city and kill. Do not let your eye spare, nor have any pity, utterly slay old and young, men, maidens, and little children and women, but do not come near anyone on whom is the mark. And now I want to remind you something. This is that mean old God of the Old Testament. No, this is Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ was the God of the Old Testament. Only one God has had contact with men, if you believe what Christ said. That mark was to be put on the men who sigh and cry for the abominations that are done within. Let's go down to verse. And this happened. This happened to Jerusalem twice. This exact thing happened to Jerusalem twice. Verse 9. Then he said to me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great, and the land is filled with bloodshed, and the city is full of perversity. For they say, the Eternal has forsaken the land, and the Lord does not see. And as for me also, my eye will not spare, nor will I have pity, but I will recompense their deeds on their heads. You know, God told Adam and Eve in the garden that if you go with the devil, and I'm paraphrasing this, if you go with the devil, you're going to reap the consequences. Your descendants are going to reap the consequences. It's finally going to come to a culmination. And, you know, Adam and Eve may have figured that culmination would be in 2 or 3 months, not thousands of years in the future. Back here in the early part of this, these men with the slaughtering weapons and putting the marks on, God instructed them. Do you realize where he instructed them to start? With the elders, with the leaders. I want to give a little parallel. I had a phone call about 4 months ago from a person that was looking, that kept up with what's going on in the world, and was also a student of Bible prophecy. And he called me and told me, said, I remember something you taught me a long time ago. And he said, you said this was going to happen, and what, I'm not smart. I based it on the Bible, because there's nothing new under the sun. Things happen, and this is towards Israel. And he said, I see it happening just like you said. Now let me sidetrack a little bit here. Explain. Jacob's 12 sons became the nation of Israel. But Israel was divided, and I'm duplicating what I previously said. It was divided into the house of Judah and the house of Israel by Rehoboam and Jeroboam. So it became two separate nations. First time in the Bible the word Jew is used. The Jews are at war with Israel. First time the word Jew is used. And so the nation of Israel, Judah and the 10 tribes, disobeyed God, broke the terms of the old covenant, particularly Israel. The Jews still hang on to the concepts of the old covenant. And I'll interrupt myself a little, because the Jews really, if you'll look at their, and there's as many isms in Judaism as there is Protestant churches in Pocahontas and Randolph County, and maybe a few more. But generally, they missed the whole thing about the resurrection. Judaism is based on a good life now. That's all the Old Covenant promises. It doesn't promise eternal life. And yet, the book of Ezekiel, and I'm not going to have time to go through this today, but as we get to the end of the book of Ezekiel, over in the 37th chapter, it deals with the great white throne judgment. Them bones. And the general resurrection. And it calls it the house of Israel, because the Israel first and then the rest of the world, rest of mankind. Sorry, that's politically incorrect. That's racist to say that. That's what God said. I'm not saying it. You can argue, or anybody can argue with God all they want to. You're going to lose. You're going to lose. Then the last part of the book of Ezekiel, and I want to go through some of this before too long, deals with the millennial temple. It's got the measurements. It's got the courses of the priest. It's got the restoration of the Levitical priesthood and stuff that has never happened. It's a whole new ball game. And will that new temple be down there on that little green spot? I don't know. I somehow doubt it. I think God may build it down on Mount Zion. When it's raised back up, the highest part. And Christ gave the principle, and it's true. God doesn't put new wine in old bottles.
Right.
And
that's true.
And so, you know, I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us where. The Greeks completely dug a mountain down, Mount Zion. People think that when the Bible talks about Zion, that it's talking about Temple Mount up there. No, that's Mount Moriah. That's not Mount Zion. But the Greeks just tore it down and filled in the valley and used it for fill dirt. God says he's going to raise it back up. Talk about doing miracles. Christ said, if you got the faith of a grain of mustard, you'll move mountains. He's going to move mountain there. He's going to move several mountains around Jerusalem. He's going to split the Mount of Olives half in two. So, okay, let me digress from my digressing.
Digress from my digressing.
The nation of Israel was split, Judah and the 10 tribes. All this was actually a culmination of the old covenant with Israel. God has still kept the old covenant alive in Judah only because Judah has, and you can look at the Jewish people, they're tremendously physically blessed if they don't get killed first. But because they have retained the Sabbath, they still have the identifying sign of the Creator God. They have the identifying sign of Jesus Christ. They don't know it, where all these churches out here don't. They've got the identifying sign of Satan the devil, Sunday, rising sun, and the obelisks and all the other, the little fish god, fish thing on the bumper, you know, like the old comedian back that y'all have heard me quote a lot said about the Washington Monument. Said, don't look much like George, does it?
And, now, what was that fish? That fish was a symbol of
Dagon, the fish god.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I forgot.
And
that.
People still use it and say it's a symbol of Christ.
Said, yeah, I did for years.
You know, and that's like the cross.
Yeah.
I read one the other day. It was in a. It was a comedian that said that. Said, what do you think Jackie Kennedy Onassis would have thought if you give her a necklace with a rifle on it? Think about it a minute.
Yeah.
The stupid things that people do. So the old covenant comes to an end. Not because God broke it, but because Israel and Judah broke it. Now, God made the new covenant with Abel. He made the new covenant with Abraham. He made the new covenant with all those people listed in Hebrews 11. But he hasn't made it with the house of Israel and the house of Judah yet.